like to introduce Eric. Thank you, Eric.
Thank you, Ken. My name is Eric. I'm a grateful recovering addict, and it's always an honor to speak at this meeting. And this will be my second recording, actually. In my first recording, I pretty much told my story, but I didn't talk really that much about the steps. And so I thought tonight I would just talk about the steps. But before beginning, there's two things that are important to really establish beforehand. One is that a good sponsor makes a big difference. I was fortunate, and I still am fortunate, I think, to be living in Southern California, because every weird religious belief and disbelief is present in Southern California, the fact that I found an atheist sponsor, I think, at my second meeting is not that statistically uncommon. I sometimes don't really make a big deal about being an atheist. Meetings I go to, I still do regular meetings, and I sometimes think I should, just because it'll be a lifeline to someone. We're really fortunate here in being able to be among fellow addicts and not having to hear, that if you don't find God, you're going to die, which seems to be a fairly common refrain in less so in NA than AA, but still. And I was in a rehab at the time, and if you've ever been to a rehab, they just the counselors there are really on you to get a sponsor and work the steps. And so, having met a guy who said he was an atheist, I didn't see him again, because, not every newcomers go to meetings every day, but even a rehab won't always take you to the same meetings. And so I was under this pressure to get a sponsor, and the counselors would dog me during a meeting, and they'd go, "You need to find a sponsor. How about that guy over there?" And I go, "Ah, I don't think so." And so I was being prompted all the time to pick someone. I said, "No, I'm going to wait. There's this guy." And they were really doubting whether he existed or not. And lo and behold, he showed up again. So I was able to pick him as my sponsor. Because, yeah, a lot of people just pick anyone really, really quickly. And that said, after about a year or so, and I'll talk more about my first sponsor in the course of talking about the steps. But after about a year or so, I was getting really sick of him, and I said, I think we should part ways. I don't think our relationship is working out. And you know what he said? And this is what makes him the perfect sponsor. He said, "Well, fine, I'll help you find a new sponsor." And what we did was do what I think everyone should do, and that's why I'm bringing it up. Get to know people. I called him every day for a year until he finally asked me to stop calling him every day, and that's because I'm really high maintenance. But what he did is he said, get numbers at meetings, call five people. And the beauty of this program is you can be as socially inept as you want among fellow addicts. You can call someone and go, "I have your number. My sponsor said I had to call someone, so I'm calling you." That's all you have to do. And everyone will understand where you're coming from. And you learn to navigate through these things which seem insurmountable in everyday life, by just being, in my case, a complete dolt. So he said, "You find me." So I went through my list of people the numbers I had, and what I did is I had conversations with them, and I scheduled a kind of get together over coffee, to sort of sound things out, Because I'm 67 now. I just turned 67 on August 9th. One thing you discover is at a certain point that job interviews go both ways. You know, it's not only you're trying to say, hey, please hire me. You know, it's also, do I really want to work here? You know, the thing is, you get together with someone and, you know, you want to see if they want to sponsor you. Because not everyone has the time. Not everyone has the experience. These are things there are all kinds of reasons why it might not be a good fit. And even if you've hit it off. And there's lots of people available to sponsor. You know, have an interview. Have them ask them questions. Have you ask questions? And you know, what I discovered is that these people, I picked three people, and is these guys were really, really messed up. Some of them were more messed up than I was. And of course, it almost goes without saying that NA, everyone's messed up. But let's say they're really shaky programs. In fact, one of them asked me to sponsor him. But you know, the thing was that when all was said and done, I realized that you know, I'm going to go back to my first sponsor. This is you know, but you know, it gave me a sense of perspective, and now I felt a lot better rather than just being that desperate thing. I have to have this guy, you know. It became a choice, you know. It became a choice, and I think that's what is necessary. You know, one thing, and one thing I was just talking with someone today about this. You know, the idea of and you'll get some parts of the country and some meetings where some you've got to obey your sponsor like he's a god, you know. You've got to do what if he says wear your sandals backwards, wear your sandals backwards. It's just that sort of thing. And you know, there's some parts of the country where old timers are called gurus. You know, they actually use that word. It's like, oh my goodness, because actually, and I'm not saying this in a condescending, you know. I still haven't talked about steps, have I? Hey, I'm not saying this in a condescending. You know, if you have a good sponsor, the steps will come easy. But let me keep on talking about sponsorship. You know, the thing about sponsorship, gurus, and you know, this is a problem with religions and cult leaders and things like that, and I think there's a little cultish aspect to some meetings in some regions and areas, parts of the country, and the old timers really get, you know, this idea that, you know, you've got to shut up and listen, you've got to stick the take the cotton out of your ears and put it in your mouth. These are standard NA sayings, there's a reason for that. Don't get me wrong, but I've learned a lot from newcomers, and I still do. I remember one time I went out to and I can't stress enough, you know, hang out in the parking lot afterwards, get on these phone conversations. Most of my early time in NA was spent going to Denny's after the meeting, and you know, and hanging out with people. And really learning to be human again, which sometimes comes about through sharing and listening to other people sharing, being genuine. But I think just that relaxing and talking and for lack of a, you know, being human will really be a major driver in recovery. But you know, I don't always talk about my past that much. I had lots of weird jobs while using. One of them was I was a newspaper editor for a few months. I was actually the senior editor of a small newspaper, and I mentioned this because, you know, everyone needs to have their writing checked. You know, people make mistakes, and the thing I discovered is that, you know, when I wrote things, you know, I had them checked by someone else. You know, everyone makes mistakes. You know, my wife was a professor and a writer. Both of us write to some degree in our jobs, and you know, it's unthinkable to publish something or to send it out, make it generally available without having someone else proofread it. I mean, it's mistakes, and you know, we're still together. January 1st, we will celebrate our 23rd wedding anniversary. That's the vanadium wedding anniversary, atomic number 23, if you're wondering. But the thing about the sponsorship is it's really a reader over your shoulder, someone to double check you, because I am not a good judge, even of my own thoughts and past. I live in denial. I'll only tell one story that really relates to the first step. I was at an AA meeting. I don't go to many AA meetings, but to hear me talk, I've been to a lot of them. But I was in an AA meeting, and they were all telling piss stories. You know, apparently people they this is a thing. Apparently in AA, I've never heard this in an NA meeting, but I've been to a couple of AA meetings where people tell these outrageous stories of all the places they've peed, and I guess it makes sense. It is a liquid fellowship after all. And you know, I was feeling jealous. I was thinking, well, you know, I don't have any, you know, this is something I've never really done. You know, I don't have any good pee stories, you know, and it suddenly dawned on me that maybe I do, you know, because there was this time when I was using where I woke up one morning and of course I was unemployed and unemployable, but I would occasionally put a resume in, you know, and do my best to try to get a job. At least that was my rationale for staying at home. And you know, I went to my printer to print up my resume, and it wouldn't work. You know, it was really weird. It sort of made this chugging noise and whatnot. And I looked at the paper, and there was a thin yellow line there. I was like, what the hell? You know, and I pull it up, and there was urine in my printer. And I thought, what the hell? And you know, and I figured it had to be the dog. You know, we had this dog, and he must have climbed up there and peed in my printer. It's like, oh, fuck this dog. Anyway, so I went to my repairman. And because I had a computer guy to work my computer, I said, you know, my dog peed in my computer, can you in my printer, can you fix it? He goes, oh, no problem, we'll just clean it out. That kind of thing happens. Anyway, so after a day or so, he gives me a call, and he says, how big was that dog? You know, and I said, it's a small dog, it's a poodle. And he said, well, okay, I've cleaned your printer, but you know, when you and we've been friends for years, he said, I want you to come pick up your printer, and I never want to see you in my shop again. Right? We're done. I thought that was an extreme thing, you know. I mean, there's probably more to it than that, but that was my recollection. And I was thinking, you know, could it have been me? Could I have peed in my printer? Is that what he's implying? You know? So I'm still at this AA meeting thinking, maybe. And then I remember that I had had a dream the night before. You know, and this is the thing about denial is that we I was, you know, all the data is there, but we don't access it. Right, and this is why it's important to write out a drug log and everything. So it really just stares you right in the face. So you see the consequences, you see the progression of the disease, you really understand what happened and what is happening and continue to happen and why you have to stop doing drugs. Most people stop. You know, they suffer negative consequences, and I do believe too that if you work a thorough first step, you won't relapse. And this is important. So piercing through denial. So here I am at this meeting thinking, you know, okay, so I'd had this dream the night before. And by the way, it was a troubled dream. I had drunk an entire bottle of mezcal. You know, I'd found it. Actually, the reason I had is I'd found some old cocaine lying around so I snorted that, and then I thought I had to come down, so I had to drink something. I drank this whole bottle of mezcal. Mezcal is I don't know what it is. I know there's a worm at the bottom of the bottle. That was my goal, is to get to the bottom of the bottle so I could eat the worm. Anyway, and I fell into a troubled sleep, and in that troubled sleep, I dreamt that I had to go to the bathroom, and I was it was kind of like a canister, and I had to unscrew the canister to get at the urinal. And this was my dream the night before. The night before, I woke up in the morning with my printer full of urine, and you would think I'd make these connections, but I hadn't. I hadn't at all. That's the way denial works. So that's my denial story, and I think it relates to the sponsorship, and it relates to getting a sponsor and working the steps with someone else, because we need someone to sort of help us out, you know, probe, find these areas of denial, gently perhaps, and just be a kind of editor or an eye over the shoulder. I don't know how much time I have, but I'll talk just about two steps that I didn't talk about last time, the sixth and seventh. And I think the sixth and seventh are important because this is where we actually change. Everything before that is basically commitment. You know, the third step is committing to the program, realizing that we're insane, not being in denial about our addiction. But you know, it can be a little overwhelming. You know, what do we do about it? And so, for me, the sixth and seventh step of these, and if you work them well enough, the amends steps are a piece of cake because instead of promising that you're going to change, which is the way a lot of people consider apologies, oh, you know, I did something awful, but I promise not to do it again. And that's not what amends are. You know, amends are changing and establishing a new relationship. Sometimes you get forgiven, sometimes not. But the main thing is you're no longer the sort of person that did that shit anymore. And so the amends become really easy if you don't have to actually, you know, promise anything. Instead, you just deliver the new you. But I had a real problem with that because the step as they're formulated, I had no problem with the idea of character defects. I understand some people feel that it's unnecessarily negative. I find that most people, myself included, are very negative on themselves to begin with. You can't possibly be more negative than you are to yourself. You might as well just bring it out and deal with it. And of course, the sixth and seventh step rephrase it as shortcomings, which already is progress. I think you really have worked the sixth step when you go, well, these aren't character defects, they're just shortcomings. There, you're ready for the seventh step right there. But how do you bring about this change? And this idea of using prayer and meditation or just, you know, somehow use religion to change, it can be a little daunting for someone who doesn't subscribe to a religious tradition. And I have to say that even the way that's commonly done, which is to come up with a prayer, so to pray for the spiritual opposite of the defect, you know, I just use affirmations, and that actually turned out to be a pretty good method. And affirmations do work. So in that sense, I didn't have that much of a problem. But there were so many things that I identified as that I didn't like about myself, that I felt the second time I got to the steps that I hadn't made any progress whatsoever. And that's just a feeling. It turns out that Ken is texting. Ken, I this is well, how many more now? I'm sorry, I was looking in the everyone thing. 2 minutes. Boy, how can I encapsulate this? 2 minutes. I wasn't getting the notes. I might just go a couple of minutes over just because I want to finish the six and seven steps at very least. Using affirmations. How does one change? I was really unhappy with the way I'd worked the steps, even the first two times. I got through the sixth and seventh. And the problem I began to realize, maybe my third time, is that these were only the things that bugged me. I had taken care of the character defects that bugged other people. Other people were okay with me and with the way I was behaving. That's why the amends went so well. Some of the things that I was identifying as character defects, like procrastination, which seemed so intractable, are really a combination of lots of things, of different things. So what I needed was a kind of a method for becoming a better person, and I found it in virtue ethics. Started with a Greek philosopher named Aristotle. I actually worked through the Nicomachean Ethics, which is a book that there was a workbook for it. But you don't really have to do anything that severe. But looking at the idea of virtue ethics, coming up with things that you identify, your own system of values that you have, not mine or someone that's given to you, but the ones that you feel in your heart are the things that are important in life, And just as a side note, very briefly, spirituality for me is things that are important for life, that you look back on that make your life worthwhile, and the things you can look back maybe in the future as you're dying, perhaps looking at, did I live a good life? Those big questions, to me, to my mind, because religion talks about them, and religion is sort of taking over spirituality. That's what, meaning and purpose in life for me are spiritual issues. But identifying those core values and then coming up with a system for putting them into practice. Because a lot of people say, "Oh, I don't need to come up with some values. I've got them." Well, we all have them. And what I'm saying is identify those, but then also realize, again, getting past denial, which is, if I've talked about one thing today, I hope it's denial. Getting past denial and coming up with a way to implement them, to live according to my own values. And I think that's what the steps have given me more than anything else. It's allowed me to become who I always wanted to be. And in the cases where I didn't know what I wanted to be, it's given me a path towards discovering that. And I'll close with this sentence. When I was using, I told lots of lies to my family to sort of justify my lack of direction in life. And one of them was that I was trying to find myself, right? And I was trying to find the meaning of life. And the thing that I've discovered through the steps is that we make ourselves. The steps are a process of making ourselves who we want to be, and then living according to that. That's really what has happened, I think. I mean, I feel that I'm living a life consistent with my values today most of the time. And when I'm not, I don't beat myself up. I just keep on trucking. So that covered, I hope, some of that. Try to find substitutes and affirmation instead of prayer, and just talk to people. Talk to me after the meeting. Talk to anyone. Get numbers. This program works through, I think, nothing else than the combined optimism and hope and experience that we all give each other. That's all I got. Thanks.